The opinions expressed in Asian Wave are individual and not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. That being said, thank you for tuning in and enjoy the show.
Have you ever heard of Asian Wave?
No. What is that?
What are the latest fashion trends in Japan?
You wouldn't believe what happened to NewJeans.
불쌍한 애들. 하나만 가까이
나한테. Can we go for some hot pot right now?
From the catchy tunes of K-pop to the captivating worlds of anime, video games, and the delicious flavors of ramen and boba, East Asian culture has been making a huge impact on the world around us. But what's really behind these trends and how are they shaping our daily lives? Hi, I'm Annika.
I'm Beth.
And I'm Ohana.
And I'm Neo.
Before we begin, just a quick trigger warning. Today's episode discusses a lot of sensitive topics such as exploitation, mental health struggles, eating disorders, bullying, references to suicide within the K-pop industry, as well as rape. And welcome back to Asian Wave, where we explore the rise of Asian pop culture and its global influence. Today we'll be diving into a more serious topic, and we're going to explore the dark realities behind the K-pop industry. So at first, K-pop looks flawless from the outside, the stages, the visuals, the idols we admire, but behind all that glitz and glamour is a side of the industry that most people never see, and today we're looking behind the stage.
Because while we love music and performance, there are real people dealing with real struggles behind every comeback.
For many fans, the darker side is a shock. Harsh training from childhood, extreme beauty standards, toxic fandoms, and scandals that show how much control companies really have.
So today, we're diving into the parts of K-pop that often get ignored, the pressure, exploitation, and mental toll behind the scenes.
Okay, so before we dive into kind of the darker side, I want to know, how did everyone get into K-pop, and what is their relationship with K-pop, and how has it changed over time? Who would like to start?
I can go.
Yeah, for sure.
So I got into K-pop, I think I mentioned before, in like grade 7 officially. Before that, it had just been like Wonder Girls, Nobody, and EXO Growl that I knew and liked. But then I got put into a seating arrangement beside a girl that was really into K-pop. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Nicole Luther.
Shout out, Nicole.
Yeah. So she got me into Seventeen, which has remained my favorite group throughout the years. And that I just got like further into it because I feel like once you dive into the K-pop hole, it's really hard to get out. Yeah,
it's
you can't really get out.
Yeah.
Not that it's a cult.
No, for sure not.
No, never.
Neo, what about you?
So I got into K-pop from my cousins, really, because they listened to a lot of old gen, especially Girls' Generation. That was one of their favorites. And kind of just stemmed from there. And then I figured out like what I liked listening to just from listening to a bunch of different groups. My favorite group or groups are BTS and Blackpink. Kind of basic, but I
that's
just,
okay. Yeah. That's fine.
And also Cat's Eye.
I'll go next. So I got into K-pop from my older brother. He really got me into like Girls' Generation. I think, yeah. My first K-pop song was I got a boy, 착한, I got a boy, it's a boy, 내 맘 다가져가. Yeah, that was my first song. I got really into Girls' Generation. And then afterwards, he got me into like more boy groups. So EXO, I was a huge EXO fan in like 2013, 2012. And then I am more transferred into like other boy groups. Like I got really into like BTS and then all the produce groups like 101, IZONE, X1, all those groups. And now I think my favorite groups, I'm more into like girl groups now, if anything. So yeah, it'd be probably NewJeans. Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
Le Sserafim, and
I love Le Sserafim.
I love Le Sserafim so much.
Eat it up.
And Cat's Eye. And in terms of like listening, I think I'm getting more into like Ilit. Ilit? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Midnight Fiction.
Their music is really good.
Yeah. I only like Magnetic.
Really? I like hey, you make me jealous.
Yes.
That's such a
cute
song.
Oh no, actually that's a good song too.
Their songs are so cute and I really love it. But yeah. What about you, Beth?
I think I mentioned before, but I think it was Great Two, Great One. Obviously, I was living in Korea, so K-pop is just my pop. But
she got it right from the source. Beth got it right from the source.
Homegrown.
One of my best friends, she was into that one guy in grade two, and the guy really liked EXO. So she were trying to like get into that kind of K-pop thing. So obviously just eventually I got seriously into EXO for the first time, because before I wasn't really into K-pop.
Because K-pop has become so mainstream, I feel like a lot of people don't really know like what's actually going on, you know? I feel like a lot of people, they like K-pop, but in a very like surface level, like, oh, I like their music, and you know what, they're pretty, I like their performances. So what do you guys think, like put yourself in someone who isn't really that into K-pop, like how would you see K-pop as?
I feel like from like an outside perspective, it looks like a more like put together like Western group, like band. Because like you don't really see doing that intense like choreo and like the level of production their videos are.
Oh, for
and,
sure,
like,
yeah.
Like what they do when they go on concerts. It's definitely like a more higher produced level.
Yeah, the industry makes it seem very marketable. Like the idols themselves are products.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like in the lens of non-K-popper viewing K-pop idols, I think they're gonna be more familiar with those kind of westernized music from K-pop groups, like Cupid by 5050.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely K-pop songs with more like English lyrics, right?
With the full English lyrics especially, or those kind of easy listening because they don't listen to like... Mm-hmm. They're not gonna listen to, definitely they're not gonna listen to Stray Kids,
no,
like Torikun or something.
It's so hard to get into like Stray Kids if you're not a K-pop stan, for sure. It has like, they kind of like have a very distinct sound.
But I think a lot of like the reaction videos to like God's Menu probably helped bring in a couple of fans.
I feel like a lot of those reaction videos kind of like bring more attention to K-pop videos, you know, and it makes it more digestible for like a wider audience.
I feel like what also like when people do reaction videos, I feel like they have such... It's so easy to, like, get entertained by those because, like, their reactions, they're more used to, like, Western artists where it's they're mainly focused on just the music aspect. But, like, K-pop is not just about the music. It's about the visuals. It's about the choreography. It's about how they present themselves.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to, like, hone in on and, like, see.
Yeah. It's very hard to be casually into K-pop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the thing with K-pop. Like, you're not just selling your music, but, like, you're selling yourself as a person. Like, you are, like,
they are the product.
Exactly. So I want to talk about like the training system, like how a lot of like K-pop idols, they've been training since they were like babies.
You remember Jihyo from Twice? She's been trained since like what, like 8-year-old?
Oh my! And how old is she now?
27.
She's almost 30.
Because she's like same age as like 17 Mingyu, and
I think
so she's gonna be around 30,
for like 9 or 10 years.
Yeah, but the experience shows to me.
It does.
You know that she trained in JYP for 10 years, but she was actually trained in SM for like 2 more years.
Wow.
So in total, it's almost like 13-12 years.
Yeah.
And they, I don't know if they still do this, but they used to tell stories of like how they got scouted outside of school, and they'd get followed.
Oh god!
No,
they'd
that's
be
really
waiting
dangerous.
Outside of school, or like following them home and being like, "Take my card, take my card."
I feel like that's something like like people who don't listen to K-pop don't like realize is like how long K-pop artists train for.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy how much of their life they dedicate to being an idol.
Neo, do you want to explain, like, how the training process is? Like, what exactly do they do?
Yeah, so basically, when people are trainees, they get put through a lot of, like, training to improve their dancing and singing capabilities. But they also get tested along the way. And if they don't meet the company standards, they can be cut. And if they do meet the company standards, they still might not even debut. They might still have to go through a bunch more training, which is crazy. Some people are trainees for, like, the example we gave before, they're trainees for so long before they even debut. And sometimes they're trainees for years and they don't even debut.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people, like, give up their dreams of becoming a K-pop idol.
Except, like, Rayami, the singing voice for Rumi in K-pop Demon Hunters, she was a trainee for so, so long, and she never debuted.
Because they were like, oh, your voice is too, like, raspy. Yeah. Your voice is, like, too deep.
Yeah. But guys, rejection is redirection.
Exactly. Look where she is now.
K-pop
She's so successful.
Demon Hunters.
Yeah.
And, like, the other, like, some sort of, like, beauty, those things, or, like, beauty standards, obviously.
Yeah.
Or, like, sometimes they care about, like, heights, too.
Oh, really? Yeah, there's a lot of, a lot of beauty standards that come to play when you're
and
trying to be an idol as well.
It's not like debuting as a solo. We're talking about debuting as a group,
as
right?
A group, yeah.
So as a group,
you have to match like
everyone's vibe,
a visual.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're not fit into that one group, even if you're really good at like singing, rapping, dancing, producing, you're not gonna be debuting.
Simply just because of the way you look.
Yeah.
Didn't that happen with Le Sserafim when they were making the team in the documentary?
Yeah, the
there was one girl,
the Japanese girl. Yeah.
Yeah, but about the monthly assessments. I know, I think it's for girls as well. They've talked about how they get weighed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, it's, like, kind of crazy because how much you weigh doesn't necessarily determine, like, your figure and, like, how you look figure-wise. But, it's like, if you're over, like, 102 pounds, let's say, that's, like,
you're
supposed to be fat, which is weird.
It's so crazy in the K-pop industry. Like their beauty standards are first of all so unrealistic. Like having like a set weight, I think maybe like the average K-pop idol would be like 47 kilograms.
Mm-hmm.
Here, that would be low key. That's
it's just a stick.
Not even like stick. It's just low key. It can be unhealthy.
It's very.
It is unhealthy.
It is
Everyone's unhealthy.
Yeah. Especially if they're like forcing them to go on diets and stuff like that. Like a lot of idols and trainees, they're forced to go on these diets when they have to take account all their calorie intakes, right? They can only have like so much amount of sugar, and they're really strict on this.
Mm-hmm.
And like think about it, like you debut, and you're still like 42 kilograms or something, and you have to deal with all the schedules overnights for the week, for a month, maybe a year, and you have to sing live, dance at the same time. Like I remember one thing that at the time that Wendy from Red Velvet, she's a main vocalist, so she has to deal with every high notes and every like a music broadcast, and you can literally see her like bones in the belly, and she's trying to sing, but she keep cracks because of course not enough sleep, not enough food, not enough sugar in her body, like not enough fat. That's like, what would you expect her to be good at everything when you're not unhealthy?
They're like starving their trainers.
And Momo from Twice, I think I remember her talking about how one time for like a week straight she just ate ice cubes for her diet so she could make the weight.
Like people who don't really pay attention to K-pop, they're always surprised when like they find out how terrible like trainees are treated and like the whole process in general. And I feel like their first glimpse into that was with the Dream Academy documentary on Netflix.
I feel like Dream Academy. Yeah.
Because that's their first.
I feel like that's most people's first, like, actual look inside. Like,
I feel like a lot of people, if you weren't into K-pop, why would you watch a K-pop survival show? Exactly.
And I remember people, there was a lot of, like, when it first came out, people were, like, there was so much talk online about, like, how bad, like, the girls, how bad they treated each other, like, how, like, the company treated them, but like
that's the
what
system.
Happens like every day.
That's exactly,
it's like all about competition.
It's very competitive industry.
But I think Dream Academy was people's first look into
it. Was
because it's a Western show, right? With it's other shows like Produce that's not accessible for a more broader
and
audience.
It was like stream on Netflix, everyone could like access.
People had easy access to it.
So let's talk about kind of like the contracts that idols kind of have to deal with working with these companies, because a lot of, well, all K-pop groups, they have to work underneath a company. You know, that's how they get promoted. That's how they get trained. That's basically how they get all their money. So let's talk about, you know, the unfairness that these companies put them through.
Their contracts are so one-sided. It's crazy. It's so much in the company's favor. And like, even when they, like idols, they don't get paid for years, because the way it works is like the company gives them money to produce their album, like get their whole like get makeovers, do their hair, and the idols are paying for that themselves from the company's expenses. And if they don't make up that money,
they're in
with
debt.
With their comeback or their album, they're in debt to the company. And some companies, their contracts, that debt rolls over to their next album. Right. So they just keep accumulating more and more debt.
A lot of, like, idols, when they start out, a lot of them are in debt because a lot of these companies make them put in their own money for training and stuff like that.
What I heard from my mom is that she told me that those, like, contract process is actually came from, like, those bars, like adult bars, like prostitution bars.
Really?
Yeah, so what they do is they pick up the girls who don't have anywhere to go and just make them presentable to be sold. And because they spend a lot of money on one girl to be presentable, like beauty or like clothes, just makeup, physical, right? And they have to like pay back the whole time to work working there. Mm-hmm. That's why they got trapped. That's why it's called slave contract.
Yeah. And this is our, sorry to interrupt, this is what human trafficking is for listeners. An extremely exploitative industry.
It really is.
And on the note of human trafficking, I actually wanted to bring up a topic called the Burning Sun scandal.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about
it. You guys have heard about it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Let's explain it for people who don't know.
Yeah. K-pop. Okay. So the Burning Sun scandal, which some of you may have seen from the popular podcaster Rotten Mango as well, Stephanie Hsu, Big Bang was like a huge K-pop group,
right?
Like one of the most prominent like foundations for K-pop, I'd say. If any of you know the song that goes like "Bang Bang Bang,", bang. Yeah.
If you guys know Thanos Fantastic from Squid Game,
if you know Thanos from Squid Games, and so one of the members in that group, his name is Seungri. Did I pronounce that right?
Seungri,
yeah, Seungri. It was exposed that he ran this club called Burning Sun with a few other guys, and it turns out that they were actually sex trafficking women. Yeah. They found chats that they had together talking about like raping women and like taking videos of it, mm-hmm. and like sex trafficking them.
Yeah.
And oh my god.
They had like footage of the girls inside the rooms.
So basically they draw girls and just making those tapes.
Right. Yeah. It was one of the maybe the darkest scandal in K-pop mm-hmm. history. He did prison time, he's been released, and he's now opening another club.
Wow, okay.
In like Hong Kong.
Why is he released?
Yeah.
Why is he
released? I think it's in the Philippines.
Philippines?
Philippines. That's great. Wow, Philippines.
Fact check me on that, actually. But
There's so many scandals that happen to K-pop. And when a scandal happens, it's like a huge deal. Speaking of another scandal, Neo, do you want to tell us about the whole NewJeans scandal?
So I'm pretty sure most people are familiar with NewJeans. I feel like NewJeans is like, even people who don't listen to K-pop.
Yeah, you like NewJeans.
Like, everyone loves NewJeans. But for those who don't know, NewJeans has been in a very very messy legal battle with their label / company, Adore / Hybe. And it's like one of the biggest label versus artist battles we've seen in K-pop. So they tried to terminate their contract, saying that their company broke their trust and created a very toxic work environment for them. And they've shared many times how like even like their company, they would say that their company told other groups like ignore them, like not talk to them basically.
With the whole eyelid thing, right?
Yeah. And basically a Seoul legal court said like, no, you can't just like leave your company. Like that's you sign a contract.
Yeah, because you've never really heard about that from any other idols. Like what idols like...
Exactly. And it's very hard for idols to try to break their contract.
For sure.
And so now they basically can't do anything without Adore's approval. And because of the ruling, they're now on hiatus for, I think, till 2029. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure.
Because they did lose the battle, unfortunately.
So they're basically on a forced pause right now.
Yeah.
Instead of a voluntary one. Because we know that they want to be making music and be out there with their fans. But there are a lot of claims of workplace harassment and a lot of leaked private info and just overall bad vibes behind the scenes of the whole thing, which is wild considering like how big NewJeans is.
Yeah.
like from their debut, they were probably one of, they probably are one of the biggest K-pop groups around. And even with them being on hiatus, they still have some of the highest streams on Spotify out of any, not just high group, but K-pop group in general, which is crazy.
As a bunnies, like, I just love them.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, like, just follow whatever they want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Mm.
They were on their way to becoming, like, a global sensation.
And they are. That's the thing. They already are.
But I feel like that shows just, like, how badly they were mistreated, that they're willing to put their success and their career on the line to fight for a better work environment. And
yeah. Like, for everyone.
Yeah.
They just want to make music. They just want to, like, do it for their fans as well, right? I think because we're all bunnies, like, as a bunny, I feel like I want to hear their music, you know? We love their music, but it's also, like, I think we need to acknowledge the fact that they're still human beings and they still go through their personal struggles. Mm-hmm. So I think they should take as much time as they need to, like, until they're ready to come back and, you know, give it their all, but not their all, but you know what I mean.
I can wait.
Like, we can just wait.
Just think that they're in a, like, army or something.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to the military and they're going to come back. What do you think, Ohana?
So Bunny is a NewJeans fan.
Yeah. We're bunnies. NewJeans fans. Yes. Yeah.
I think that I've seen so many varying opinions online, people being like, oh, why are they fighting against, like, this big company? Like, they should have just stayed quiet and, like, made their music, and, like, or they're being groomed. They shouldn't listen to Minhyun.
But it's commendable.
Yeah. But I remember when that YouTube video got released and they decided to speak out, and I thought, you know what? Like, good on them.
Go for it.
Good. Like, how many idols would really do that are, like, adults and they're just kids?
Yeah.
And, like, I don't really know what truly goes on behind the scenes or if they were made to do that by somebody. But, like, from one young person to another, like, I can't imagine having to deal with all the exploitation and pressure that comes with that success. And so I hope that they take care of themselves.
Leading off from, you know, the mental issues that come with being an idol, there's been a lot of situations where, you know, these idols, it becomes really hard for them. The point of me when I was a K-pop fan realizing, like, what actually goes on was when Sully from FX passed away, and she committed suicide mostly because of all the backlash that she was getting online, you know, when it came to her love life with, I forgot what his name is. That came out and a lot of people started hating on her and eventually drove her to, you know, kill herself or commit suicide. And it's not something that we see often in the K-pop industry, but when we do, it's very impactful. Not even with Sully, but also with Jonghyun from SHINee. He was, when that news came out, like, everyone was heartbroken. And I think that was kind of like the first suicide in the K-pop industry. And I think everyone kind of took a moment to realize, you know what, this industry is really messed up. And these idols go through so much mentally, physically. And I think it just, that kind of thing, just, it needs to make us realize that they go through so much. And they're doing this for their fans as well, right? So they're doing it for us.
It's heartbreaking. Like, the constant, like, the environment of the K-pop industry, the constant harassment and bullying that comes from both ends, both the company and the fans. The fact that an industry that is meant to just bring music and art and joy to people can drive people to that
point.
Yeah, to that point. Like, it should not be that way.
And that wraps up today's look into the darker side of K-pop. From harsh training and beauty standards to pressure and exploitation, there's so much going on what we see on that stage.
At the end of the day, every idol is a real person. Behind the performances and viral moments are dreams, struggles, and lives. They aren't always as perfect as they seem.
As fans, we should enjoy the music while still respecting their humanity and being mindful of their face.
And this is just the beginning. There's so much more to uncover, from social media's impact to what constant spotlight really does to someone.
Thanks for listening to Asian Wave. Stay tuned for more. And remember that idols are humans too.
Yes, it got a little depressed. But till next time, stay curious, stay connected, and keep riding the wave.
Bye. Bye. Bye.